Hello and welcome to iVow. I'm Jenny Prisk and I'm your host in this podcast conversation. And today we are very pleased to welcome to our program Hamsatu Alamin of Nigeria, who is currently in residence at the Joan B. Kroc Institute for Peace and Justice at the University of San Diego as a peacemaker. Welcome to our program, Hamsatu.
Thank you.
It is very nice to have you with us.
And a pleasure also to be with you.
You're a long way from home and from really, your family.
Really, 8 hours time difference from my home.
Yes, and somehow those 8 hours match the number of children you have, yeah. I understand.
Yeah, sure. Yes, I said earlier, I'm a mother of 8, grandmother of 12, and then with a lot of dependents in an extended family. And that's the African setting for you.
That is wonderful. And you said you live very close to your family, so they're surrounding
you.
Yeah.
That is the essence of the extended family. In fact, we normally live in large compounds so that our children would have a fortune developed for themselves, also with their wives, have their wives and children, so that even if one of the partner, that is you, the eldest, one of you is no more, at least you wouldn't be lonely. That boredom will be off you. Your children will just peep in early in the morning to see how you are doing. And their children, your grandchildren, will be around with you, playing with you at old age. So honestly, it's a very, very convenient way of living.
Yeah. It sounds wonderful. I think more of us should do it. And that's what keeps you young. However, you're also an extremely busy woman in your country as a peacemaker. And I'd just like you to share with us the work that you do in Nigeria.
The context I operate on is honestly very diverse and complex. Yeah, and then the drivers of the conflicts around us are very dynamic. Yeah, in fact, I'm historically Borno, that is the state where I come from, is the gateway of Islam to West Africa, a very important center of Islamic education. Islamic education is so much entrenched in our culture, in our way of life, that honestly, for us, the Kanuri of Borno, there is no other way of life. Our traditions, our culture is all Islamic. So to the ordinary man, honestly, the ordinary Kanuri, especially who is not informed, honestly, Western education, as it comes with the Western Christian missionary, it looks like a system of disbelief to them, because anything that is non-Muslim is disbelief to them. So this is the context we live in. I can remember as a child, we sing and play, students of Western education, there is knowledge but no religion, because simply they don't see the white man or his followers doing the 5 daily prayers. So therefore, in fact, nobody cares to address this. It is common up till today, children sing and dance. So out of this, a negative perception emerged. Out of that negative perception, an ideology that Boko Haram, that is, Western education is forbidden, emerged. Because nobody cared to address it, then people started indoctrinating people with this negative ideology, and then it led to violence. So therefore, the young man, the system, this Western, the Islamic education that is entrenched, was not included in planning for the modern secular education. In fact, what governments could have done was to maybe integrate this system into the Western, so that, in fact, to show that, yes, there is no difference. Western secular education is a way of life, while the religious is a way of reaching for, your spirituality. So this was neglected. So with as the society grows, in fact, every parent is keen to ensure that his or her child, his son or daughter, in fact, acquires the basic religious knowledge. And the young mind is also yearning to acquire that knowledge. And that's, so the system cannot provide them the knowledge they are yearning for. Mm-hmm. So therefore, other unscrupulous people who set up these quack schools at the outskirts of the city can now fill in the young mind with these negative ideas and tendencies. And then I call it the system. Our system have also failed us. In fact, all mechanisms, architectures for managing conflicts, addressing issues have become weakened. Mm-hmm. Therefore, when people like the founder of Boko Haram were advocating this idea of Western education, including even Western healthcare system is forbidden for their subjects, in fact, people see it, and then he also integrates the propagates Sharia as an alternative to the corrupt system, patrimonial politics, which breeds corruption, where, in fact, there is a lot of injustice. He has uneducated, unqualified people taking everything that their children, driving flashy cars, and, in fact, the young people are seeing it. So, therefore, when he started advocating Sharia as an alternative for this system, which the product of Western education have brought, in fact, people found it very convenient and attractive to them, so that they started following it. And then subsequently, when it came violent, the government has to respond with violence by setting up a counter-terrorism operation body called this Joint Task Force. Mm-hmm. And the Joint Task Force did not help the matter, because they were aliens coming from elsewhere. They don't know who a Boko Haram is. In fact, in our country, if anybody from my part of the country, that is the town I came from, tells you that he doesn't have a relation, whether distance or close, who is not a member, is a lie. So all of us know who they are. So definitely, when they go and attack these security agencies, they come back and run into their homes. The security, yes, of course, they don't wear uniform, they don't carry any tag. So therefore, to the security man coming from somewhere, everybody, every youth they see is an either accomplice or the terrorist itself. So therefore, our youth are threatened. Yes, the security personnel will come and mop up innocent youth and then take them to the military detention center, and they will be seen no more. So, in fact, it was at this point, as a daughter of the soil who has benefited from the system, in fact, because of the opposite to Western education, not many of us are well educated and well a bit enlightened to be speaking the way I am doing. So, therefore, I took it a point of duty at that point to start going to our communities to identify the mothers of these young men who have now been indoctrinated and perpetrating this violence, identifying with them, consoling with them, talking to them, and then also talking to some networks and forums that I saw that were in to discuss that, yes, this is our problem associated with our religion, so it is us who have to talk and then find a solution to that. So, in fact, along my doing this, in the course of doing that, I was once arrested in one of such forums, mm-hmm. and then taken to the military detention center. I was subsequently released. And then thereafter, my son also, who goes to school, he was about 16 years, with his books and ID card. In fact, in one of these operations, the military has to arrest him with other boys. Yeah, because if there are incidents to them, any youth they see is a Boko Haram. Mm-hmm. So he was arrested. Later, I found out by the time I went, one of his friends with whom they were has already been shot dead. Fortunately, mine hasn't been killed. So I said, honestly, if we keep quiet and see, watch these things, honestly, before we know it, one, our youth will be wasted. They are indoctrinated. They have abandoned school. They have abandoned their works. And then secondly, counterterrorism operation will take its toll on it. And then all of us will subsequently, when even I can be arrested and then released later. So this is how I started now, advocating, visiting, and then speaking between the security actors. In fact, it was during my arrest that, honestly, the military at that time, their commander to whom we were taken to knew that some of us are really, not all of us, in that part of the country are sympathetic to Boko Haram. In fact, indeed, some of us are even working to seek for solutions for these problems. So this is how I started identifying with the victims, and then also took my time as a historian to start documenting daily incidences, what has been happening, because I know it is very, very important. In fact, violence has been an alien to our culture for a long time in history. We haven't so. In fact, my state is being acronymed the home of peace. So such violence is quite alien to us. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we need to document all these incidences raw as they happen, so that posterity will know and they'll guard against it. So I took my time, honestly, to start documenting every incident, because at that time, no reporter goes to the area. No international person goes. Everybody is afraid. So therefore, these are some of the peace-building initiative, creating a network of civil society as voices of the voiceless so that they can speak for the women whose children were abducted, taken to military detention camp without nobody to report to, nowhere to report to. At least we can speak for them. So impacts, these are some of the scenario I find myself and then how I became a peace builder.
You are a wonderful interview. I don't have to do any work. You provide all the facts and all the details. And for us learning of this for the first time, this is quite overwhelming as to what is going on, because I know in the Western world, we don't understand it fully. So I have in front of me some of your biography, and I know that you're the regional manager of the Northeastern Section of Nigeria Stability and Reconciliation Program, and you're also an executive member of the Federation of Muslim Women's Associations in Nigeria. Yeah. Are you making headway? Because I know that you are working alongside other women and men to mollify the situation and to bring peace. Do you feel as though you are making progress?
Oh, yes. Impact, yes. As I told you, nobody visits, nobody goes there. It's a voiceless society. Mm-hmm. Northeastern part of the country, has the lowest scores in all human development indicators that you can think of: poverty, illiteracy, diseases, what have you. So that even if this violence of Boko Haram, when it started there, and then everything goes there as normal because people have no capacity, people have no voices. So therefore, as the regional manager of that stability program, it is a DFID-funded program. It is a peace-building program, which I find it quite convenient and then in consonance with my own area of interest and focus in life. So I work with them in four areas. That is on security and governance, in how we can improve collaboration, inclusivity, accountability between civil society and government actors. And then we work to address the drivers of conflict, what drives conflicts in the region, and then work with a wide range of network, particularly women, to see how we can work to increase participation of women and girls in peace building, because we are key and central. So there we supported the development of a Nigerian action plan for the UN Resolution 1325, Women, Peace and Security, so that, in fact, with a network of women, we now work to see how the WPS agenda will be mainstreamed into our domestic policies and legislations, as well as the daily happenings in the society. And we undertake a lot of advocacy, research, and then use the findings of this advocacy and research as advocacy tools to policymakers. So for the Federation of Muslim Women in Nigeria, it is the umbrella body of all Muslim women association. And you know everywhere, the Muslims are the apathetic one to education and development. So we are the most backward. So for all these atrocities that are committed, we are at the receiving end. Call it even for natural cases like women, girls' education, maternal and child mortality. It is all of we who suffer. So, in fact, our founding members came up with this idea of coming up with an association that will bring Muslim women together so that we work on areas of education, health, advocacy, humanitarian services, the community development, including international relations, so that, yes, we... And then, you know, now we are all over across the country. All the such states, we are grounded there. So I head the northeastern part of the region, and really we are making a difference, and then our membership runs into millions. So it's not that easy, of course, an individual cannot do it. That's why you see us, in fact, when I started with the NSRP, I facilitated the creation of civil society network for peace. So I brought all the civil society organizations in the state, including my former one, into a network, so that they can be voices of the voiceless. And out of that network, we selected the active women civil society to form the WPS, that is the Women, Peace and Security Network.
Oh, that is wonderful. And that is so vital. And it sounds as though you are getting good responses from the government as well as the militants towards your work, or do you still have a long way to go?
Oh, honestly, The most interesting part is you will maybe think that, okay, I am at risk doing this kind of work.
Oh, I'm
but
sure.
Believe you me, I have never been threatened by any militant in my part of the country.
That's amazing.
Yes, the military, yes, this is the some are the misconceptions. These are some of the misconceptions. You know, these militants started as an ideological group, mm-hmm. and somehow along the line they were hijacked by some desperate politicians, and then by other criminalities, and then violence ensued, and they became violent. Some of them became violent, but still there are some of them who are yearning for peace, who are against the bloodletting. In fact, they are even looking for people who will understand and engage them. You know, when they came back and then started these targeted killings, there are some angers in them, but nobody cares to address those angers that fuels this extremism. So therefore, they feel honestly the best way to express that anger is to retaliate against state actors by killing them because they killed their members and others. So honestly, I am very, very, I have worked with militants in their hideouts and openly when they were in Maiduguri, because I know they know, I told you they are all part of us. I am a Kanuri, I am a native Kanuri, so there is no way I can disown them, and they have never threatened me in life. And then I can say even it is the government that does not even care what I am doing, what people like me and others are doing. Because I believe honestly, if government was keen to listen to us and then impact, make us part of certain engagements, I believe this thing wouldn't have deteriorated to the level that it did. Because when international actors like International Committee of Red Cross came, and they went, in fact, they were the first in humanitarian actor to come to the state, apart from my organization, the NSRP. NSRP is there simply because me, I am there, because they cannot get anybody from any part of the country to come and establish at that time.
It is so much smarter to work with the people in the area.
And then when ICRC came, they looked for me. When they looked for me, honestly, there was a time there was a big attack in one of the hard-to-reach area at the border with Niger. We call it Baga. Many people were injured. And then they wanted to reach out and render humanitarian assistance. At that time, the militants had been pushed out of Maiduguri. They were all over in those forests. Mm-hmm. Nobody dares travel there because Doctors Without Borders, once their vehicle was even snatched away from them. Believe you me, I and one other woman got to our contacts in Maiduguri, reached to our links, negotiated. We used our own resources, negotiated with them. Finally, you know, one funny question they asked, said was, honestly, we are not comfortable with the Red Cross. And we said, well, the Red Cross goes with the Red Crescent. So even if it is you, if your members were injured and they find you, honestly, trust them, these people are going to take care of you.
And did they believe you?
They believed.
They trusted
around
you.
Around 12 midnight, honestly, I was called to be informed that tell your people to follow them through Monguno. We will be watching them. Nobody will touch them. And believe you me, the following day, ICRC went, and thereafter, subsequently, they went severally, render humanitarian assistance, come back, not once, not twice, but severally. And they are still living to testify to this, where only two of us women. One, my partner wasn't in Maiduguri. I'm just communicating with her. She was on assignment elsewhere while I was on the ground communicating, whatever. And then that's so if the militants can trust us to this extent, and ICRC has trusted when we women, at that time, my other colleague was not even in town. But when I told them, yes, they said, you are free to go. They will be watching you. Follow this road. They did not doubt me. They went, and separately they went and came back. So therefore, if our government has been keen at that time or has taken us seriously, honestly, I know we could have solved some of these problems.
Oh, I'm sure.
But unfortunately, the government doesn't even care for the work people like me and others who are doing. In fact, I am not relevant even in government. That's why I found my several relevance in the society, working with the grassroots, with people who care about their peace and security, and then I'm making a difference and I'm happy doing that.
You most certainly are, I can
without tell. Without any bureaucracy.
Yes. I'm sitting across from a very empowered and empowering woman. And speaking of women, I actually would like to turn to girls. I know that you were part of the organization for the return in Chibok of the Bring Back Our Girls campaign. Can you tell us the situation of that today? I know some girls have been returned, but I'm not sure that we get the news very fully or very clearly here in the United States. So what can you share with us?
You know, when these girls were first abducted, it was that network which week I told you about, the Women, Peace and Security Network. Mm-hmm. About 11 of us women, we wore black dresses and then came and hid ours. At that time, you know, the government forces were saying the girls had been rescued. And then some of them have come back while parents were, there were a lot of controversies. So we came and then hid ourselves in the meeting room of a local, our state radio house, and address the press, members of the press, expressing our anger, our dismay. And then we were with some of the indigenous of Chibok then. And then this press conference of ours was amplified by this NSRP program, mm-hmm. which they disseminated it widely across all international actors. Mm-hmm. And that gave impetus to the Bring Back Our Girls campaign. Mm-hmm. And thereafter, we never relented. The governor's wife called us because she saw that we made this press call for what we can do. In fact, we accompanied the governor's wife 1 week after the abduction to go to the Chibok community itself and then met with the parents physically. In fact, we saw the girls who were able to escape at that time. When I was talking with one of the girls, her mother just came and pulled her off my hand, leave my daughter for me, So in fact, right from day one, we are part and parcel of that. But then somewhere along the way, people now took it and then it now becoming politicized. Yes, people are just elsewhere and even in my country and then internationally, people just make it as if it's a way of making name or getting popularity. In fact, recently, I'm just being reading from some key government actors in my country and the parents that, yes, people are making it as an avenue of making money. Because, yes, some of those who are even who escaped and those who are rescued, because practically nothing much is being seen, done to them.
Right.
Yes. And then, honestly, then one recently or recent, you know, one of them came out with the so-called boy who married her, with mm-hmm. a baby at hand. In fact, the boy facilitated their coming out together because he said he is fed up of living that terrorist life.
I'm sure.
Yeah, so when
That's
they
good
saw
to
him,
hear.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So he came out with that girl and then they met these youth volunteers. So they surrendered themselves and then they were taken and then brought. And then, you know, before you know it, the girl is being flown like a celebrity all over the country when actually that is not what that girl needs. Yes, a girl abducted from school, having a child in the forest, and others. In fact, her identity, maybe her physical identity could have been protected and then healed and then stabilized. But then people just do it as if saw it as scoring a political goal, parading her all over. And the boy who is instrumental to her being found was now I'm sure he must have been rearrested because up till now, I don't even know where he is. We did hear about him again. And we hear condemnation from the Bring Back Our Girls, from others, that he is a sex exploiter. He shouldn't be called her husband. But since our interest is rescuing the girls, even if it is the Boko Haram leader, Shekau himself, who came with one girl, honestly, I will just welcome him, treat him well, because he is the hero. Without him, we couldn't have gotten any girl. So if that boy has been treated in that manner, believe you me, by now, many other of his colleagues in the bush who were forcefully conscripted would have come out with many girls for us. But because he did not, then nobody saw the benefit of him doing that. Up till now, no other insurgent came out with the girls.
Well, I'm so glad that we've been able to hear the positive story and the right side of the story from you. Very, very sadly, we are coming to the conclusion of our interview, Hamsatu. I don't want to finish without you telling us what this experience will mean for you, the experience of being a peacemaker in San Diego. What will this mean for you when you return to your home in the northeast region of Nigeria? What will you be able to change or implement, perhaps any differently, because of your time here?
Yeah, honestly, personally, it's a thing of joy that even when institutions and governments in my country do not care about what I am doing back internationally, it is being recognized, appreciated, and even celebrated. So, in fact, I appreciate this opportunity. And then really, I believe this, although the Peacemakers Program, they said it's not capacity building, but really it has built my capacity. Yes, more.
Good.
And then, yeah, my life history will be documented and then published. And I believe a hard copy of that publication will also follow. So that, yes, my people in my part of the country who see me as their role model, as mentor, can read. You can easily access that copy and read and then be motivated further. And then, yes, now I see this is an opportunity for me to network further and then be linked up with like minds who will be willing to maybe even partner with me or support us down there to do what we are doing better. And then even connect me also to others who are doing similar things so that I can learn from them also. As I share mine, I can learn from them and then go back and then do what I'm doing better. And on ground now, like the youth in my country are looking forward to me to organize them, you know, because of the failure of government when they cannot handle the situation. In fact, we have to resort to self-defense mechanism. All our youth now took local arms to defend the society, and they, by the day, their number is growing. So for insurgency, what do we do with this youth? Yes, so in fact, the youth has even entrusted, they have taken me as one of their principal partners because I advocate for them. So I hope by the time I leave San Diego, I will be able to have an organization of people who are working so that I get this idea, so that I go back and then how I can streamline this youth to be productive, useful, non-violent youth to the society force insurgency.
That is a wonderful story, an amazing story. We're very fortunate to have you here amongst us in San Diego. And I know how much the people in your region will be missing you while you're here, and yet how much they value you for your leadership and the work that you have done. And I'm so delighted that we were able to spend a very short amount of time with you, Hamsatu Alamin of Nigeria, sharing your story with us today. And we're very grateful, and thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. The time is not even enough to give you more, but at least I hope this is just the beginning, and then, yes, the world will come, and then particularly San Diego community will know that there are people in that part of the country, extreme northeastern Nigeria, who are keen and then working for their society, and the society itself also is appreciative, and then we really appreciate that opportunity. Thank you very much.
Well, you're very welcome. And our listeners will appreciate learning more about the real situation in northern Nigeria. And we could have talked with you for days yet.
Really?
Unfortunately, we do need to conclude the conversation.
Sure,
so once again, Hamsatu Alamin of Nigeria, thank you for joining us on iVow.
Thank you, Jen. Thank you very much.